Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us here today on LA Talk Radio for Get Yourself the Job. I'm Jennifer Hill, co-host, and we have here with us Brandon Maslin, my dear friend, mentor, and incredible co-host to share his wisdom with you today, as well as Sean Layden, who we'll introduce you to here in a moment. Before we do that, though, we want to thank today's sponsor who makes the show possible for everybody, and that is the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary placement, executive search, and payrolling options. So please keep them in mind, all of me. I'll share with you a little bit about who our guest Sean Layden is to him and to the world. It's a pretty impressive gentleman who we have joining us today.
Well, I loved, Jennifer, that you started with who Sean Layden is to me. So maybe that's a good place for us to begin. Sean Layden is a dear friend of mine. And I would love to think that that makes me unique, but I think that Sean Layden is a dear friend to so many people. Every time I talk to someone who knows Sean, you know, some version of, I love that guy. He's amazing. You know, the effusiveness of which people who truly know and respect Sean speak about him. I'm not in the elite club. I'm in the most general club I know. I met Sean when I worked at a feminist organization for over 6 years. And Sean was one of the only members, probably the institutional member in that organization. And he was, you know, he showed up at almost every dinner. We would host these dinners. We'd show up at every dinner. It usually was just me as the only guy. Sean would be the other. And that, and what it means to be a true male ally. And he'll talk about that today. He's impressive. He was the chairman of SIE Worldwide Studios. He was a president for those of you who don't know, it's Sony Interactive Entertainment. And for those of you who just don't care about any of those things, it's PlayStation. So if you have a PS2, PS3, PS4, interested in buying PS5, and the games that go along with it, Sean Layden has had his hands in the evolution and the growth over almost a 30-year career at making that company, Sony, and then eventually PlayStation, what it is today. He was also at one point the COO. Sean is the reason we're starting here. Me and Jennifer did this trick where we said, which guest will we get? And we'll build a month-long or 2-month-long thing around this. And this next month is going to be about leadership. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't think of a more appropriate first guest. We're going to have so many, I think, over the coming months on leadership. But what a great introduction. So to leadership. Sean, I'm going to turn it over to you. Is there anything I missed? You want to maybe tell us anything else I'm missing about you, man?
Well, thank you, Brandon, and good afternoon, Jennifer. No, you thoroughly embarrassed me with that. And I think you hit all the things that you feel just a little bit self-conscious right now.
I heard you also solve world peace, by the way, Sean. I didn't want to toot your own horn, but on the break. I'm teasing.
That's next Thursday.
Oh, sorry. I got my dates mixed up after the Nobel Peace Laureate Prize that you're going to receive.
Right. Yeah. And he does volunteer at his local grocery store to help people mask up since the beginning of COVID. So, you know, it's just, yeah, he does it all. That's not quite world peace. Jennifer, why don't we start? What question might you have for Sean? We're lucky to have him.
Yeah, Sean. So I think the question on a lot of people's mind right now is, what does being a good leader mean? And I know one of the things that we talked about offline before we had you join us on the show is the idea of how you first need to learn to follow before you can learn to be a good leader. And I think that's something that we rarely touch on, and it's so important and foundational even to what makes a great leader. I would love to hear a little bit about your insights and perhaps any experiences that you've had along those lines.
Of course, Jennifer, thank you for that. You know, when we talk about leadership and the qualities that that create a great leader or someone that that you want to associate with and learn from and take lessons from. A lot of it is around empathy and understanding. Mm-hmm. Empathy and understanding and the ability to communicate your thoughts clearly and in an exciting way. To develop those kind of skills, I think earlier in our careers, we need to develop ourselves to be followers. It's not anything they want me or anything they ask for me, but a more engaged following. Most people will be in a situation in their jobs where they may not have a great leader. They may have a boss. Everyone's got a boss, but they may not have a great leader right above them. So that engagement in looking for the leaders that you can learn from. Leadership is something as one who's following or a staff member rather, you know, how can you develop good habits? How can you develop good listening skills, good empathetic skills? If you see a leader in your stack or just in your cohort somewhere who you believe has these great qualities of attaching and of communicating and getting their vision across in an effective way, identify with those people. You know, latch onto them if you have to learn from them ways that you can develop those skills within yourself. If you don't know how to follow well, when you become a leader, you won't be able to see the world from the other end of the telescope. You'll have forgotten what it's like to be there, and you won't be able to bring a group together to concentrated purpose unless you understand what is the thirst of the following group.
Sean, that's a beautiful point about your tie-in there around the importance of, and I really do think in the world we're living in now, empathy is such a superpower that's desperately needed in the leaders we seek out within our careers and beyond. And one thing you tied in there here is that experiences matter. That if you understand what it is to be in that seat, you'll be more empathetic to the people who are in that seat when you're at the top. Can you maybe talk a little bit of your journey? Because you were at one, me and Jennifer are recruiters. You know, if someone's at a company sometimes more than 3 months, we're like, wow, good for you. And then 3 years is impressive. But you were at Sony for a while. So can you talk about that journey from follower to leader?
Yeah, when I joined Sony back in 1987, I didn't expect it to be a 30-plus trip. Communications department. It was just kind of an opportunity where I took, with my American Studies degree from Notre Dame, my really only marketable skill was the ability to speak Japanese. Because no one would pay you for Mark Twain dissertations. So I went to Tokyo. I got a job with Sony in the communications department. And we can talk about this later, but I was what we would call today a diversity hire. I was one of the first non-Japanese to be brought into that whole department division as Japanese companies were trying to, what they would say, internationalize their employee base. And so I got in as being a non-Japanese into that organization and learned what it was like to be the only non-Japanese in a group of Japanese and how to be the outsider looking in and all these different things that impacted my career early on. I think helped me later on. It's an essential quality. It's not a tick the box. It's not a nice to have. It's not something you just give lip service to, because that is a super strength. And maybe we'll talk about that later. But in my course in Sony, the only thing I knew in my 20s was just be useful. Don't always ask what's in it for me. Look at your skills and what can you offer? What can you add? When you offer to give assistance to people or say, can I assist with that project? Can I help you out? You begin to gain a reputation of being someone that people can count on. And if you can be someone that people count on, think about how rare that is in our own lives. We can all count on both of our hands, you know, how many people we could really count on in a pinch. And I think that's an important quality to develop early in your career. And when you do that, and over time, it will get noticed. It will be remembered. People definitely remember the person who came in when the chips were down and things were super hard and got it done and didn't say, well, how's this going to affect my bonus? And can I get a better office? And gee, my cube is really small. No, just deal with the matter at hand. And over time, I tend to believe, and maybe I'm a bit too rose-colored glasses around that, I tend to believe that good deeds will get seen and will get recognized and will get you another chance to show your value.
I couldn't agree more, Sean. I love that. You remind me when I first opened my own company, it was like 2010, and I was invited to begin speaking to law firms at the time. It was post the big recession, and people were really trying to figure out, how do I get a job and keep a job? And so there was a series that I was teaching around the country called How to Be Indispensable in the Workplace.
I seem to have lost Jennifer's audio.
I lost that too. Okay, I didn't know if it was me. We'll keep going and we'll wait for Jennifer to join us back. Sean, one thing I'm wondering is, we talked about followership. Talk to me about that moment when you went from follower, that first recognized moment when you went to leader, where you can remember what that felt like or how that came to be.
Not so much in a, got a promotion, got a staff, that type of thing. But I do remember a moment. I had the privilege early on in my career to work for 5 years as the assistant and secretary to Akio Morita, who is the founder of Sony. And arguably, at that time, the most famous man in Japan, more famous than the prime minister than anybody. He was a force of nature, equal parts Henry Ford and Steve Jobs and everything in between. But I remember one day we were having a meeting, and at the board of directors, he wanted to have this plan to go forward. He wanted to put this communications thing out. Everybody on his leadership board said, "Oh, that's a great idea, Mr. Morita. Let's do that." And the chairman asked me and a colleague, that another young man who was working with me, he said, "Hey, you guys, just a second." We said, "What? What do you think of this plan of mine, this thing I want to do? What do you think? Everyone agrees that we should do this. What do you guys think?" And of course, what we thought was, "Don't do it." And we had good reasons for that. And we explained that this is not time for that action, and this is the kind of result it could create. And then he asked me, "Why is it that you're the only two people who will tell me no about this?" And my colleague and I had the same response, which was, our career is not about saying yes. Our career is about doing what we believe is the right thing for the company and for you. And that's what we believe. And I was very heartened in that moment. Chairman took a couple of beats and then said, "Okay, go tell the board I'm not going to do it." And we went around, we told the board that the chairman has stood down from the idea. And I felt very empowered in that moment, that here was the founder of Sony asking me, "What's your opinion? What do you think we should do?" And then when we told the truth, which was how we felt about it, he took it in and he listened, which is another key aspect of being a great leader. If you lose the ability to listen, you can no longer be a leader.
If you lose the ability to listen, you can no longer be a great leader. That's beautiful. And one of the things that I hear there, and we've known each other a long time, and you know this idea, but one of the books that I've always been inspired to write, and you've been one of the inspirations for it, is this idea of, and because I've seen you real time with your teams, and I know so many people that you've been in senior positions with, and who looked up to you, if you will, and this idea of inspiration coming from the top, that it is very hard to be inspired, and how inspired, that lack of inspiration trickles down, but also inspiration trickles down. And I thought to myself, that's not enough, because I coach a lot of up and coming people, whether they're right out of college or, they're ready for that VP role. And I love the idea of bubble up motivation. So trickle down inspiration, bubble up motivation. And I love that you just gave a beautiful example of how both you were inspired to have your voice heard, but you were empowered to motivate this leader to make a change. And I think that is just such a wonderful combination of how so often in our careers, I would imagine that created a trust with him, right? And then what happened after that? I mean, take us through. So then that happens, and I imagine a stronger relationship. And then how do you get to be Sean Layden? So we can all try
to be. Well, I was very encouraged and impressed by the fact that the chairman would listen to two guys in their late 20s. On a very strategic move for the company and advise him against that. And the only reason being that I didn't think what was in it for me. I just realized this was probably the wrong move and these are the reasons why and we should not do this. And Morita-san was the kind of person who would listen to ideas from everywhere up and down the stack. He was a great speaker. He really attracted people. I remember I was his speechwriter during this time, and we'd go around the world and give speeches at different events. And I remember we were coming out of a speech given to like the Japan American Chamber of Commerce in Dallas. And he wanted to go to San Antonio and see a semiconductor factory that we recently bought. And we got there, and I said to Mr. Morita in the car, I said, "This wasn't scheduled and I didn't write a speech for this." And he turned to me and he said, "Sean, if you need to have a written speech to talk to your own employees, you're not doing it right."
Love that.
Well, he went into the cafeteria, he asked them how much time did he have. They said 15 minutes. Bang, 14 minutes and 40 seconds, he was done. He had his story, had his anecdote. He told the whole thing. And he did it all in English, which is not his native language. It was, it's incredible. I couldn't imagine having to do that in Japanese, the way that he was able to do it in English. But he had that connection. His team, his company, very much loved Morita-san, and he loved them back.
Well, Sean, I'm going to make you more uncomfortable because I know a lot of people who worked with you over the years, and that you, again, you led, and they equally love you and admire you. And it's not just for the brilliance of what you bring, but I think it's the heart of what you bring. And what I'm hearing is in that mentor, really, and that sponsor you had, someone who instilled in that, speak from the emotion will come through. And through the emotion, the message will follow, right? And I think a lot about that in storytelling, if you will. I actually, it's a nice sequitur because storytelling is such a component of what you did at PlayStation. I bring that to the full webinar with a friend of mine, Alexandra Riggs, around storytelling. Could you talk about the importance of storytelling as a leader and even take us maybe through the creative journey of PlayStation of how that played into it?
Well, of course, PlayStation, which sort of changed the face of video gaming when it came on the market 25 years ago, and really changed what people could think a game could deliver, rather than just the thrills and the adrenaline rush and the excitement of racing or fighting. It's turned into the premier medium for storytelling. It's video gaming is a huge $50 billion industry in North America alone. And we now have a technology and the ability and the great talent and creative talent to tell engaging stories, whether it's The Last of Us or whether it's Red Dead or any of these very narratively driven stories, and to get it out. And so I've always been fascinated by storytelling, and not just in the obvious places, which is making a game that has a story behind it. How do you do that? Or writing a speech and how do you tell a story within that? I think storytelling is, if you look at that work from a few years ago, Sapiens, that's where we all connect. That's where we all come together. Everything's a story. That's something I used to tell my team when we were working on a budget presentation. What could be higher than a budget presentation? Here are some numbers. Here's a spreadsheet. Here's a graph. Are all the arrows going in the right direction or not? But the effective budget presentation tells a story. You go in there to tell the story of your vision, of where you're going to take your department, your group. How are you going to attack this challenge? It's not all these numbers come in here and all these numbers go out there, and that's how we determine whether that's a good presentation. No. You want to go in there and grab them and say, you're going to want to empower me to do this thing I'm going to ask money for these reasons. And this is why it's awesome. And this is how it's going to change the world as we know it. And it's going to cost some money, and this is what it costs. So telling that story is so important, and the skill to do that, because people remember stories. People don't remember spreadsheets. People don't remember line graphs. The story is what they'll remember, or how they felt when they heard it. Did they get excited and invigorated by it? Or were they crushed by it? Like, oh my God, that sounds like the worst thing to spend money on ever. That is the power of the story. And I think at all levels in the company, until we can take our daily activities and where we're trying to go in our businesses and tell a story around that, that can get people excited to do it. And this is true whether you're in video gaming or whether you're in pharmaceuticals. There's a story around everything. And that's how we get the leadership above us, who are in controlling the purse strings, and the team around us, who are going to deliver the result. That's a key component for being a leader. So as you're out there and you're looking for leaders to emulate or leaders to follow or people to throw your energy behind, be sure to take a look at the good storytellers. They will guide your way in many places.
It'll guide your way in many places. I like that. And one thing that you said, Sean, with you did this with your hands. I'm a coach at heart, so I watch what people do with their hands. But most people listen to this on the radio, so they can't see you. So whether on their who listens to things on our radio anymore, on our cell phones and what have you. You mentioned pressures, and I think we're living in a very much pressure cooker time, right? And I truly do believe, besides a creative, I think you're a futurist. I do. And I think one of the things about being a futurist that makes you so unique, and what I've seen in real time, especially when you tell a story, is the importance of a pivot. Hey, this isn't working. Let's acknowledge it, and let's not be afraid to pivot. Can you talk about that either the future of leadership or the importance of a pivot, but to not get weighed down overwhelmingly by the totality of things that can weigh us down.
A lot of people talk about the heart of leadership being self-confidence. I think the secret heart of leadership is self-doubt. I believe someone who can lead a team through a challenge, through an exercise, carry a burden, you have to have a little bit of self-doubt. And insofar as you're continually questioning yourself, okay, this is what we decided to do, this is how we're doing it, how's it working? You just don't lock and load a plan and then let it run for 12 months and then look at the result when it comes out. You're continually trimming the sails, turning the dial, pick your metaphor. But you've got to stay engaged and hands-on for the decisions you made, because you may have made the wrong one, or circumstances have changed in the interim and you need to adjust to that. I think right now we're all experiencing that and living in a world of shelter at home and, you know, live at work, or, you know, quarantine's my life. I think the important leaders now, as we motor through and power through this time of year of 2020, which looks like it may continue, if you will, into 2021 like this, the leaders of tomorrow to get us through this are really going to be explorers, not bosses. Mm-hmm. Just being a boss isn't going to be enough anymore. You have to be an explorer. You're going to have to know that I'm setting out to see. And someone said to me, we're talking about this, about the current state of play that we are in the world. Someone said very succinctly, you know, business people are used to uncertainty. What they're not used to is the complete unknown. Five or six different ways this thing is going to spin. Let's go in there and see. We're not certain which one, but it's going to be probably one of these. We're in a world now where we're setting out to sea and we don't have a sextant. We don't have any radar that works. Even dead reckoning, because it's so cloudy, you're going to have to make a leap of faith. In that world, someone has to stand up on the prow and say north. But at the same time, that person has to continue to look at that and say, maybe 10 degrees east is where we really need to be. Continue to tweak that. It's going to be the ability to have that courage of the explorer that's going to help people get out of these COVID times, if you will, and into the world thereafter. There's no going back. You ever hear someone say, when do we get to go back to the way it was? That's over. That is done. As I said in a different conference, the world of 2019 is sealed in amber. We can observe it as a phenomenon. We can learn from, but it doesn't tell us very much about what's going to happen in the future, which is interesting, because at the same time, we always talk about how important being data-driven in your planning. Wow, I don't have a lot of data about pandemic life, so I'm really having trouble getting a data-driven answer. I think we have to look at human nature and human qualities, and everyone's changing. Everyone is coping with this in a different way, and I think we have to take that into consideration as we build new work models going forward, new organizational design, the expectations that everyone's going to go back to driving the freeway for 3 hours a day. I think that's an unreasonable expectation now. Everything changes, and the explorer mentality will help you get out into that.
I love that. I'm a big quote guy, and I know you are too. And, you know, that Mark Twain quote about, you know, 20 years from now, our regrets comes not from the things we do, but the things we don't do. And that dream, discover, explore. And it's always that last that propels me forward so that I don't have regret. And I think that's something that, again, I've said this a few times, but I learned, you were a former CEO, and I learned this from another COO, which is, it's no point in surviving 2020 for these companies if not setting themselves up to thrive in 2021. And to your point, they can't see it. So you got to, there's a risk. Jennifer, welcome back. You came back at the time. I got to tell you.
Well, I thought I would make you guys miss me by going off for a little bit, take a little coffee break, give you guys a little space. So it's great to be back here. And this is the thing, not knowing what's going to happen, Sean, like what you were saying or what you said, Brandon, in these times, because the internet is overloaded and everything, we're all doing the best we can. And I think something that a leader does during these times is that no matter what happens, you handle it with grace and ease and poise. And you're like, oh, okay, my internet went down. You're kind of like the guy from The Matrix, where you're dodging bullets this way, that way, doing a backflip over the side of a building. That's kind of what it takes to be a leader. And I was trying to find a quote from John Cotter, who I believe it was out of Stanford or Harvard, who's a business management and leadership expert. And he talks about that during certain times, you need managers to manage something. But during times of great change, that's when you need a leader. A manager is somebody who can handle the status quo and, you know, to your point, Sean, can keep the boat going in the direction it's going with clear weather, you know, pretty sunny skies, all great. But a leader has to forecast for things that you have never even seen before. And I think to your point, Brandon, and we've all been talking about this, we don't know. Nobody has this proverbial crystal ball. And if you do, please call into the show because we'd like to have you on air and hear what's going to happen. But I have not met that person yet. And so the only thing we have control over as a leader or a follower is action. This leader is great. Is it whatever is thrown at them?
Wonderful. Sean, any thoughts on that? On what a lead, on...
I mean, I entered my, what I call my sabbatical period. Have a lot of hands-on experience with trying to manage a team virtually through Zoom. In a distributed way that a lot of my colleagues are doing right now. But if I were to do that, I think one of the most important things now is more than ever, communication is the only thing that we have with keeping our teams together. I mean, back in the olden days, in the before times, when we were all in buildings together, you know, a lot of us used to practice just sort of the management of walking around, going around, stopping in different groups, stopping in different floors, just without an agenda and just saying, hey, what's up? What can I help you with? Is there some rock I can move or some burden I can ease? Or you just want to show me something cool and get me excited about what your team is working on? Right now, I think it's really important that leaders reach out to their teams and be very upfront, be very clear, be very honest. This is not the time for, you know, pablum around let's endeavor to persevere and we're going to be on the right side of history if we don't do the wrong bucket of thing, whatever, you know. Just be very clear saying this is a difficult time. We have to learn to readjust our expectations without the support of brick and mortar or without the ability to meet customers face to face. How do we meet these new challenges? It's all new. There are no wrong answers or there's no idea we're not going to explore because none of us here were alive in 1918. Mm. So we don't know what that's like. And so being very upfront with your teams, let your teams know that there are answers you don't have. And that's fine. It's fine because they will help you with that. You'll all get there together. I think this is not the time to look at teams and say, now how do we continue with triple digit growth? Now let's just be cohesive. Let's continue to move the mission forward, whether that's a product or a service. Let us understand the changing needs of our customers in a real way. I think slowing down, which has happened to us, I think is a gift and a wonderful opportunity we have. I think in many ways, the world has been pressed on pause. We didn't think it could happen. If you ask people, could the entire educational system almost of the world go from in-person teaching to remote teaching in 30 days, they would think you were insane. But a lot of teachers did it. Oh God, the teachers are amazing. They've managed to do that to keep our kids learning through virtual platforms in 30 days. So nothing is impossible. Mm. And in fact, if we don't take this opportunity now to rethink some of the old, tired, clunky business models that we had that always kind of kept going on just because, well, you know, it's always been like that and it's too much trouble to change. Now's the time to change it all. Now's the time to look at what does it take to be, to speed your product to market? What does it take to be more responsive to your customers for your services? How can you get that feedback and action those ideas? A lot of the old stuff, I think, needs to go by the wayside.
And as long as we're on that topic of old stuff, Sean, and something that you've modeled so well, is the idea of allyship and the importance of being a strong male ally. or, and I love allyship because it is not, that is a misnomer, that we have to be, it's men. It's actually anyone who is not, who's part of the majority or not a part of the minority in the room. So if it's a room full of women, but it happens to be only one person of color, then you can be an ally to them. Allyship is universal. You just have to be reflective. And unfortunately, at least in America and certainly other places, at the senior most levels, there's a delta for strong women in those seats. And you have, in every sense of the word, been an ally and support of, and et cetera. Could you explain for our audience what allyship means to you and how you've tried to put that into action? And lastly, Sean, how you've tried to inspire other people to be great allies as well.
Allyship and even diversity, these are words that we didn't really have when I was starting out 30-something years ago. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the discussion, I started in Sony in Tokyo almost like a diversity hire, though we didn't call them that then. It was the internationalization of the company. But through that window, I did get to see what it was like to be in a minority group inside a larger majority, how there were some doors that were open and others which were closed. At the same time, there were some doors that were open to me as a 28-year-old American that weren't open to a 28-year-old Japanese person. Because for whatever host of reasons that were around that. So you started to learn how to get into places and become part of bigger projects with those opportunities that you had at hand. But what I learned from then is looking at the teams that were actively put together, because I had a number of leaders, not just Morita-san at Sony, who built good teams together. And there were Japanese, non-Japanese, male, female, all in the same group. Because those leaders realize that you get a wider set of experiences. You get a wider set of information. Another way to put it, you get more weapons, a different variety of them. And that will necessarily make your team stronger or make your position broader. I took that from the early days, then moving into the PlayStation business later in life. And then I was in England for about 9 years and then came back to Japan for another few years. And then most recently here in San Francisco from 2010, I've had the chance to work on three continents and three huge cities with a workforce that is very divergent, shall we say. And so then to manage at a global level, I think those experiences helped me understand what those challenges were and how working with a Japanese team is different than an English team or European team, et cetera. But always to have that idea that the more people, the wider array of people, the more views I have in the room, I am more powerful, the team is more powerful because of it. Allyship is a component of that, is to realize that it's incumbent on my cohort and my generation and folks where I'm at to continue to replenish that pool of talent, to continue to bring in new voices and new ideas. In gaming, it was an easy thing to figure out, because as our footprint, or as our legion of fans for our games continued to grow into the tens of millions or over 100 million, we took a decision years ago to say our development teams, in order to create content that is relevant to that wide of an audience, needs to look like the audience. Our teams need to be like our fans, all shapes and sizes, all genders, all orientations, all colors, all, everything from all around the world. PlayStation is available in 172 countries. And everybody likes their content just a little bit differently. So we built the power of our teams based around bringing more voices into the room, a wider color palette, if you will, in order for us to create content that would be relevant to a wider audience. And you could say there was a commercial driver behind doing that. But it was not only the right thing to do, it was the business smart thing to do.
Yeah, you make me think of a guest I'd had on, Sean, a couple of years back, who talked about what it took for people to get to the moon. He was very close with some of the astronauts who were on the very first flight to the moon. And I remember the story that he shared is, I think the scientists, if I recall correctly, at NASA were struggling. They had a very kind of similar mix of people for months and months trying to find the solution of how do we get our astronauts on the moon safely. And one person said this background, that background, a completely dissimilar group of four people in a room. And what was brilliant and beautiful about that was that in less than a month, that group of entirely dissimilar people, because they all had a differing perspective, were able to come up with solutions for something that's never been done before. And I think it's analogous to the times that we're seeing right now with COVID and not knowing what to expect and being allies and looking for, okay, who are the people already in the organization that we can collaborate with? I remember something I used to love to do with our team when I ran a recruiting company was to do escape games. Because sometimes you don't know how people's brains work. You might have one person who is very in their head and good at figuring out numbers, and somebody else who's a little bit more ethereal, who can see bigger picture stuff. And I think it's important that we honor and respect who we are and what we can bring, and that we kind of welcome in the people who might be on the phrase, like somebody who's numbers oriented might easily be promoted through the ranks because it's a valued skill. Yet somebody who's more of an ethereal creative sort might be overlooked because they're not at the table knocking down the door of the leadership team. And so kind of taking this dream team, if you will, it's almost like your super team, Marvel, whatever you want to call it, and knowing that each one of you brings something and bring everybody to the top at the same time.
And I think that's so important, Jennifer, right now, by the way, with the virtual formats that we're in, to make sure we're passing the ball, because people can very much hide in these Zoom chats and be silent. And, you know, it's so often the introvert is the one who has the best idea. And I just had one of these seven people ones the other day. And we, at one point, someone had been silent and said, well, we haven't heard from you. Can we hear what you have to say? And the points were brilliant. And they were so salient to what we were doing now is to pass the ball, to make sure that people don't fall behind or quieter behind our screens, to make sure we're doing that. Sean is also, and we're almost, I know we're going to let Sean go soon. So two things I think that are important to understand. Sean is a true champion of the creative. And I think that, you know, talked about the business, you know, case for diversity and what have you. But I think there's also a business case for creativity. Granted, PlayStation is a more creative place than, let's say, a bank. But I still think there's a role that creatives play. Sean, can you talk about your passion for creatives? And then we're going to sort of bring it to a close for you at least.
Yeah, sure. That was my greatest privilege, being the chairman of our worldwide studios organization, which had about 13 studios around the world, Europe and Asia and in America. And I told the teams at the time, and I believe that group was just to clear the road. The creative talent needs space. The creative talent needs support. They don't need a leader telling them how to make their game or what the game is about. What they need is someone who will believe in them, someone who will also, you know, tell it like it is. I remember years ago when I was working in Europe with some studios, and this is a bad a habit that fell out of favor, where some studios had teams that were the game ideation team. Six guys in a room, and they're going to come up with the game ideas. And then they'll take the idea and they'll give it to a team, and the team will build that game. All of a sudden, the person who had the idea no longer owns the outcome. They're just ripping the piece of paper off, handing it over. The team who's doing it didn't own the idea. So you can imagine not very good results from that, where everyone has the ability to point a finger at another person saying, well, it was a terrible idea. Well, it was a rubbish execution. And so everyone's free, right? No one has to own the fact that the game's not very good. Also, when you have the same six people coming together every 6 months to come up with the same six ideas, you get a lot of variations on trolls in space. So, you know, it's almost like we'd be better off we just grabbed someone off the street and threw them at the table and said, if you had to play a game, what game would you want to play? Just to get new ideas. So we abandoned that program and made teams self-contained, that they would have the creative designers, the drivers, and the tools and the finance to get it all done inside their own and take control of their product and their outcome. My job is just to remove the boulders in the road or to be there to help some of the leaders in the teams with more of the, shall we say, managerial challenges rather than what would be a good character design or dialogue, which I have no input on at all. But that's a good, teams can do their best work. And that doesn't mean you're going to be an active agent in that, or you're going to have to direct it at a very micro level. In fact, it's better you peel away, give that power of the creative decision-making to the people who are best placed to do it, and then realize your job is just to make sure that the budget is delivered and the marketing program is effective.
That's it, small stuff. Sean, we're going to let you go in a second. Jennifer, I don't know if you know, you don't know this story, but it's appropriate that Sean's on for Halloween, because when I first met Sean, we knew each other, we partnered, and then he did the panel where we really connected around. And there's a few things before I let him go. I would say to my colleagues, she's like, we were talking about Halloween. I go, I'm going to dress as Sean Layden this year. I just want to go as Sean. But, that just seems like a fun life. And really, that was our inside joke that every year I was going to see Sean Layden. But, beyond that, one of my other favorite Sean Layden stories was we were at a table one time and Sean Layden was asked, and I'm sorry to speak in third person, my friend, but I want you to fill in if you remember what you said when you were talking about feminism. And you said, feminism is important to me, but more than a feminist, I think of myself as a, what did you say?
Yeah, I don't want to, it's very simple. I just don't want to be an asshole.
Yeah. I think you went one step further, and I want to honor what Sean said, because this was before the book Anti-Racist. This was before Sean said, this was about 4 years ago, and he said, I just want to be an anti-ass. And mm-hmm. I say that oftentimes to audiences, and I go, if every man in America just woke up tomorrow and said, I'm going to be an asshole, which means you're actively shutting down people who are causing harm, who are actually oftentimes in pain themselves, but they want to express their pain to others. If every person just did that at a baseline, we would have a more, equity-filled, diverse world. So I just love it. I told that story one time in Chicago, but I wasn't allowed to curse, and it just doesn't sound as good when he can't say anything else. I said anti-jerk. It just doesn't play. And I've modeled myself, Sean. I want to thank you, because I've been on stages where I'm the only, and I don't think I have a position for my privilege to speak necessarily of someone else's experience. I speak of my experience as best I can. And I was bullied my entire life. And I took that bullying and I bullied myself. And I use that to empathize with anyone who's in pain. And I consider myself sincerely, when I do so much work, as an anti-bully. Mm-hmm. I think this is the time for the anti-bullies as well as the anti-a-holes. So thank you, my friend. And then lastly, before I let him go, and he knows this, but we left one part of allyship that's so important for us to realize. An ally is not self-defined. You can't run around the world and say, no one supports women more than me, or I support this group. It's not your role. You do the action, you do the work. That group that you seek the support will tell you. And when I saw Sean on a panel, before he came up, four people came up to me that we all knew in common and said, he didn't even begin to scratch the surface. He flew on his own dime to Japan to support our women's group, and he didn't talk about that. He did all these things and all these actions. And Sean, you've done a lot for me as a friend. You've done a lot for our audience on behalf of so many people that you've done for. Thank you. I hope you get back all of you've given, because you deserve so much good, brother.
Brandon, Jennifer, thank you for this opportunity. It was a great chance to talk about things that are still very, very important to me.
Thank you, Sean.
Such a pleasure, Sean. Thank you again for everything you do and for modeling to us what an ally and a leader can look like in any time that we find ourselves in.
Thanks again, you guys, and all the best.
Thanks, you're welcome. Thank you.
So, Jennifer, that was your first time really hearing from Sean, and I know we're going to wrap soon. I have my takeaways, so I'm happy to do this.
We could have talked to Sean for hours, but I think that leadership, I think it's not an option anymore. It's the new normal. Leadership is the new normal, because we're all having the opportunity to become leaders in our lives. And I think the more that we can learn from people and model that, a leader is not somebody who is a dictator. A leader is someone who is inclusive, not exclusive. And I think Sean really emulated that for us and for our listeners and our audience today. And so I would love to know from you, Brandon, I know we're at the tail end here, what are our three takeaways for our listeners today that they could go off into the week and apply to their life?
It's so funny, because I know Sean so well, and we talk often. And so it was interesting, because what I thought my takeaways were going to be are not what my takeaways necessarily are, which is one of the joys of this work and these kind of conversations. So what I have is just be useful. That's it, period. I do think women are, I don't think the world's a meritocracy, unfortunately. So I think sponsors matter and some of the other things we'll talk around. But at the end of the day, at a baseline, be useful and also have them develop empathy and understanding. Because do it when you're starting your career, because you will have it when you're at the top of your career. And that's so important. Tell a great story. People connect to a great story, not spreadsheets. And that's so important if you're a leader to inspire your team to tell great stories. I learned this as a lawyer. You don't hold a pen in your hand, and yet I am. So sorry about that. Leaders of tomorrow are explorers. I mean, come on. Just mic drop on that one alone. I hadn't heard that. I'm geeking out. I've got all the metaphors running through my head. You know, and be upfront and honest. Everyone knows what's going on. They're not stupid, right? So call it. And then finally, and I love this, if you can take anything away, if you are a leader or you want to be a leader or you're starting your career, you're ending your career, it doesn't matter. Clear the road. What a beautiful thing. Sort of that anti-bully, anti-a-hole concept, same thing. Clear the road for others and see if they don't just take you 100 miles further than you've ever dreamed you could go. Those are my takeaways for great leaders. I threw a lot out there. Maybe we can put in the show notes, what have you. But once again, you're a great leader. Jennifer, you bring out the best in others. You've inspired me in my lifetime. And again, it's always an honor to do this work. And I'm excited for this series.
Yeah, me too, my friend. I'm so happy that you know Sean and you invited him to join us. I think that the world's opportunities for growth and problems, if you want to call them that, can be solved through conversations. We can all sit around and say, it's not fair. This shouldn't be this way. The company should be run differently. However, on the flip side, just like in business, in families, in friendships, everything can be, basically embraced, resolved, and even up-leveled in a conversation. And that's the power of words. We can discuss things. We can shoot ideas. We can inspire each other to think differently. And one thing I'd wanted to mention to Sean at the end there is another thing for me that I've noticed makes a great leader is somebody who asks questions. It's easy to tell somebody this is how you do something, but the greatest leaders I've ever known have said, well, what do you think? How do you think we should handle that? And allow people to come to their own conclusions. And I know we kind of touched on that briefly. So I'm deeply grateful. Thank you to everybody who tuned in out there. It's been such a pleasure and a joy to have you here with us as always. If you missed any portion of the show, later in the week, you will be able to find it on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We do this for you. So please leave us feedback if you'd like us to have certain types of guests on, special months with certain topics. Leave us comments there or on our Get Yourself the Job Facebook page. Please rate us, love us or hate us. It helps us know what you think. That's how we can develop ourselves and figure out what matters to you as the audience. And you can also go to latalkradio.com and go to the Get Yourself the Job page, and you'll find a link for the show shortly after we wrap up. And you can listen to this episode as many times as you like and whenever and wherever you want. So feel free to check us out there or email us at getyourselfthejob@gmail.com with thoughts, questions, and thank you for joining us.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.